It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field, into the end zone, and Nix makes the catch for the touchdown. He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary.
Boots one, returnable for Williams from his own 20. Lost the ball, and the Giants say they have it, and they do. Devin Thomas recovered it, but the rookie Jaquan Williams punched it out.
Manning out of the shotgun set, he's back to throw. Finds the pocket, deep ball down the left sideline, and it's going to be caught. Was he inbounds? Yes, Manningham on the sideline. Brady's under pressure, Brady's chased, Brady heaves one. Down the middle of the field, into the end zone, a jump ball, and it's incomplete, and the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
Now, here's your host, John Schmell.
And Lance Meadow on Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, presented by Andrew Mark. And not on a lot of sleep here, both Lance and I up late last night doing the, obviously, the NFL season opener between the Giants and the Dallas Cowboys, and a very disappointing loss for the New York Giants and for Giants fans as they fall to the Dallas Cowboys in that game 24-17. And we'll go through all the stuff here, but we also, the reason we're here is to give Giant fans a chance to call in and kind of vent, express your frustration. We'll listen, probably get a little snippy with you back and forth if you talk about something that we don't think makes any sense. But the bottom line is, we're here for you this morning, coming off a very difficult opening night loss. 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513, also on Twitter at hashtag Giants Chat. All right, Lance, the phone calls are already coming in really fast and furious here, but let's just give our quick opinions on the game here before we get to the calls. The way I see it, and what is a little disturbing if I'm a Giants fan, is that the way the Giants lost this game is the way they lost games in the regular season last year. Their running game was anemic. Spare two Ahmad Bradshaw runs, I think, of over 10 or close to 20 yards. One. Number two, you gave up big plays on defense. And you could say there was injury, sure, but two of those big plays were given up by your number one cornerback. So that's issue number two. And then issue number three, and I didn't quite understand this. In the locker room postgame, I liked how the players weren't too panicked or upset. It's just the first game of the year. Obviously, there's a whole lot of football yet to be played. I understand all of that. What you do at the end of the season is more important than what you do at the beginning. I get all that, too. However, I heard the phrase wake-up call a lot being used in the locker room. This was a wake-up call. Why were you sleeping? Yeah. First game of the regular season, national TV, against a division rival, and you're celebrating last year's championship. Who needs a wake-up call? But those are my three things, Lance. What do you got?
No, that's a valid point about that quote that you heard in the locker room.
Because, multiple times.
I mean, listen, expectations were high during the preseason. This team is pretty much intact from the Super Bowl roster last season. You know, the offense had its ups and downs in the preseason, but guys are healthy, so there was no reason for them to have the viewpoint that they needed a wake-up call. That's surprising to hear. I know Tom Coughlin also said that he's not going to blow any smoke up you-know-what anymore.
And he also said a little humble pie, too, being served. But I never got the feeling that this team was cocky heading into the game, to be honest with you. I felt they had a quiet confidence, which usually is a good thing.
And they were well-prepared. You know, the guys, like I said, were healthy for the most part. Yep. Unfortunately, you know, they had some injuries that took place throughout the game. Just piggybacking off of the points that you brought up, the running game, a big disappointment. Clearly, that was something that they were striving for coming into this season, getting that balance, getting back to that hard pound style of football. And it just never developed last night, mainly because of some issues on the offensive line. And, you know, one of the things that we talked about last night and also prior, John, has been how well the offensive line has done in protecting Eli Manning. That was not so last night. There were a lot of breakdowns, and with DeMarcus Ware and Jason Hatcher got to Eli Manning.
Hatcher played a very good game for Dallas.
And one was a 15-yard loss, which really took them out of field goal range.
Eli Manning, 3 sacks for 26 yards, and we mentioned the rushing attack, 19 for 82 overall. Bradshaw was 17 for 78, which, frankly, those numbers are better than I thought they were based on watching the game. But, again, he had that 133-yarder.
And one 10-yard run for the touchdown. So
that
might
have been 15 or 17, yeah. So that kind of evened things out a little bit. But, anyway, are you ready to do some phone calls?
Oh, I'm ready.
Lance?
I'm ready to rock.
And he was
there.
Taking your calls all night last night, so let's get right back to you at 201-939-4513. I should also mention you could send in your questions via Twitter to hashtag Giants Chat. But let's start out with John down in Florida. He was first up. Johnny, good morning. How you doing?
Morning, guys. How's it going?
Could well, be John. Better, old John.
first off, I would just want to say that I really think the few guys that we picked up over the offseason, I think, played good. And, you know, the former teammate and Bennett played good. Mm-hmm. I think we finally got a nice, fast, not that he's our only one, but a nice, fast linebacker with Rivers, I think, was a good pickup, as long as he could stay healthy. But my big three things would be the run game, obviously, because I just – like Lance just said, I don't think we're doing too much of the power run. I see a lot of left to right and not a lot up the middle, and I know that could be with the offensive line, mm-hmm. but that, the run defense, and...
Good point.
I didn't see too much of stopping of the run last night. I mean, in the beginning, yeah, but the second half, they started to kind of run all over us.
Yeah,
actually, those would probably be my two biggest things right there.
Yeah, and you know what? DeMarco Murray's average, and John, thanks a lot for the call. We're going to try to get through the callers quick today. I'm sure we're going to have a lot of you this morning. And DeMarco Murray finished 20 for 131 for a 6.5-yard average. But again, that's skewed by the 148-yarder that he had where he broke a couple tackles. It looked like Kiwanuka got held on the play as well. That wasn't called. In fact, no holding penalties were called on either team until the fourth quarter. It seemed like the referees kind of took a – we're going to let him play and not get in the way here type of tack throughout the entire game.
But it was
game.
Called consistently on both sides.
Correct. And the Cowboys were penalized like crazy in the fourth quarter. But again, 26 for 143 for Dallas on the ground. That's certainly something that the Giants are going to want to clean up, Lance.
They kept him in check in the first half. He only had 28 yards. And then DeMarco Murray certainly ran wild in the second half. You touched on that 48-yard run. Certainly helped pad his numbers. And, you know, missed tackles will kill you. It was evident last season. Marshawn Lynch, Fred Jackson, I point to, had big games last year. And also off of missed tackles. You don't want to see those trends continue. That's probably the most troubling aspect, as you touched on right off the top of the show. You thought now with the defense healthy, everybody working in unison throughout the preseason, they'd work past some of those issues. But last night, all of a sudden, back to square one somewhat in some of the things that plagued them through that 7-7 start last year.
And I think the Cowboys really used the draw to great effect yesterday. They know the Giants are going to try to rush the passer and get to the quarterback. A couple times you caught JPP out of his rush lane on the outside. You got some yards out of that. I thought the Cowboys used that draw very effectively to try to defuse the Giants' pass rush and run the football.
And Romo did a good job eluding tackles.
Oh, he did.
I mean, he's a mobile quarterback, and the Giants are used to seeing mobile quarterbacks. There's plenty of them in the division, and they're going to probably see more so this season because RG3 is now joining
you're
the
right.
party.
And you're right. Romo only got sacked twice, but I think the Giants' defensive line actually did a pretty good job getting pressure on him. He was running around a lot. He got flushed out of the pocket a lot. That's just what makes Tony Romo Tony Romo's ability to avoid the rush. And people were talking about it this morning. He really, with a poor offensive line, I'll use the word poor, he really did a lot for that offense.
And they lost their starting center. Phil Costa was out. They threw Ryan Cook, who they just got off of the Dolphins.
And Tyron Smith, the guy that's going to be a starting left tackle in this league for a long time. I thought JPP really had his way with him, too, on the outside. He was kind of throwing him around a little bit the entire game. Of course, first ever regular season start at left tackle for Tyron Smith. So that's how it goes sometimes. 201. 939-4513. Again, 4 hours of sleep. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Lenny in Indiana. What's up, Len?
Hey, what's going on?
Good morning, pal.
Just a couple quick things. I kind of feel like that this is, I hate to say par for the course, but, I mean, last year the Giants started off with a loss to Washington. It kind of starts low. They always have. I know that they've been 6-2 by the half for the last couple of years, but it's always kind of sluggish and slow. It doesn't feel like they get off to a really, like, fast start. For whatever reason, they kind of, like, you know, December hits and they become a different team most of the time. The defensive line, I think, really does need to kind of stop what's coming up the middle. Those draw plays weren't – it was almost on a level of embarrassing. But, you know, the other thing is that, you know, the cornerbacks weren't that great either. So
nope.
I think, you know, when you say wake-up call, I kind of agree because they kind of snooze in the beginning. They always have.
Not Lenny, you know what? It looked like they were snoozing a little bit. I understand why you would say that, but they shouldn't be. And that was the point I was trying to make. It might have looked like they needed a wake-up call and some humble pie, as Coach Coughlin said. But why? I mean, this is the Dallas – I mean, it's not like you're opening up against the team you expect to beat playing your C game. This is a Dallas Cowboys team that has – a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback, two dangerous wide receivers, well, three now, apparently, the way Kevin Ogletree played in that game. And as another quote I love from Coach Coughlin in the postgame show, Watching this game, you think we've never seen a slant pattern before. Yeah. They killed them with those slants all game long.
Dez Bryant and Ogletree specifically, yeah. And even Miles Austin got it to the mix. And what a catch by Austin where he outjumped Justin Tryon on first and 30. You know, the two things that really stand out about last night's game, John, you got the ball on the Dallas Cowboys' one-yard line, and you can't punch it in. And you allow a team to convert when they're 30 yards out to try to get a first down. I mean, two opposite ends of the spectrum. How do you expect to win a football game when you let those two things happen? That, to me, was mind-boggling. I mean, you got to be able to punch it in when you're 1 yard out. They get a touchdown early on instead of a field goal. You know, that could change very well the momentum of the game.
Well, missed opportunities. Then you had the turnover, obviously, on the David Wilson fumble. And, you know, not converting in the red zone, turnovers, not being able to run, not being able to stop the run, all things Coach Coughlin hawks on all the time.
It was one mental mistake after the other last night. It wasn't necessarily that it was they forgot to play football, and all of a sudden the X's and O's
sloppy
just broke
play.
Down. Fumbles, you know, Corey Webster just getting beat.
On two double moves, one at the line of scrimmage, one further down the field. He got caught looking in the backfield.
Not being aware of the situation. I mean, it's as simple as that. Missed tackles. I know you said Kiwanuka may have been held, but if you got a guy wrapped up, you got to take him down. Same, Justin Tuck had an opportunity as well on that play.
And on that DeMarco Murray run, and we'll get back to your calls in a second. Why did DeMarco Murray cut it back inside at the end of that run?
I thought
it was hilarious. It's like, the guy's got an open silent. He's like, I want to hit somebody. And he just ran into the defender. I thought it was hilarious.
Dez Bryant sealed off the defender in front of him.
Funny.
All he had to do was run straight, and Murray goes to his left. I giggled at the time. I mean, basically the Giants dodged a bullet there. That was another touchdown.
I thought it was funny. 201-939-4513. Kevin's down in Philadelphia. What's up, Kevin?
Hey, how's it going?
Kevin, good morning, pal.
It's actually Devin, I guess. Somebody didn't hear me well.
Oh, Devin, no worries, man. What's up, pal?
The one that was on Twitter.
Devin from Twitter. Nice. The one that gets
me
all riled up.
All right. Let's see what you got today, Devin. I'm looking forward to this.
I'm very disappointed in the secondary, specifically Corey Webster, because I believe he's been undressed by Dez Bryant and Ogletree. He fell for the same moves, and during the time when Tony Robo audibled to cover the blitz, and the Giants seemed not to have an answer for it. And when he does it twice, the same way, the same play, it kind of disappointed me a little bit. And also the run defense is frustrating because they always got there, but they couldn't finish the play. And Tom Coughlin has been speaking about finishing the play all year last year. I'm surprised that it just didn't translate to this game, which is very important. And also covering these mobile quarterbacks, because as you alluded to earlier, it's all over the NFC East now. You know, because if we're struggling with Tony Romo, it's going to be a long day against Robert Griffin and a very long day against Michael Vick. And I'm getting flashbacks of a couple of years ago when we were getting torched in the air and we had to go sign Antro Roll. And speaking of him, do you think it's time for him to jump in the corner position to give some help?
I think you might see a little bit, but I don't think it was Hosley, Devin, that really got victimized in the slot. I thought Hosley actually played pretty well, which is where Roll would help you out at the corner spot. But I think your first point really was a good one. In a game where you already have Prince not there, Terrell Thomas is on IR, Michael Cole eventually, you know, hurts his hamstring again, and you got to bring Justin Tryon in, and Hosley's again starting his first ever NFL game in the regular season. You needed your top cornerback to come out and take away half of the field and allow the Giants to roll a safety help over to the other side to help out the Coes and the Tryons and the Hosleys. And you're right. In a game where they needed him to play a really good game, and it doesn't happen that often, Corey Webster played poorly last night. He got beat for a couple of big plays, got caught looking into the backfield. And when you have injuries at the position, you need your big guys to step up, Lance, and Webster just didn't do it last night.
And you would think from the Cowboys' perspective, John, they would have attacked Michael Coe right from the start. Instead, they actually went off to Corey Webster on multiple occasions. So that was a bit of a surprise. I thought Coe was aggressive for the most part when they were throwing his way, and then all of a sudden he gets the hamstring injury. You don't have Prince Amukamara to turn to. You got to throw in Justin Tryon, and Tony Romo didn't hesitate. They all of a sudden were attacking Tryon, and you know he got beat on that Miles Austin play. Ogletree beat him a couple of times. Mm-hmm. You know that's just normal game plan. You got to credit the Cowboys for you know seeing a substitution and immediately taking full advantage of that. And Webster's not a guy that you would think Dallas was going to take advantage. You expect your top corner on that side, the Giants are going to be fine. They just needed to make up for the loss of Prince Amukamara. Instead, it was literally the complete opposite. They had to make up for a dismal performance by Corey Webster.
I like how we're, by the way, transferring the Twitter questions and followers. Now they're calling in. We're getting a nice little mix here of people. It's good to hear from Devin.
Absolutely.
He did a great job on Twitter.
Especially when he gets
you
worked up.
Well.
But see, there won't be much to talk about Ramsey's Barden. That's the disappointing part. Because
he was active,
play a big role. He was active.
He did was active over Jernigan, which I wasn't surprised by, but I thought it was interesting to see where they went there. And they decided to activate Tracy instead of Ajomo, too, in terms of the defensive line, which I thought was also interesting. But something tells me Giant fans don't really care about the end of the active guys on game day.
No, we're not
morning.
Talking
no.
fourth defensive ends anymore.
It's amazing how things changed from just 2 days ago when we're talking about, you know, who the Giants' 53rd guy in the roster is. 201-939-4513, James in Teaneck, New Jersey. Good morning, James.
Good morning, guys. Pardon my voice. I'm still kind of trying to recover after last night.
Totally understood, James.
It's just we got exposed last night, and I mean it's been a constant history of Giants DBs who are getting constantly burned, who constantly cannot guard, and we need to step our game up, especially with our DBs. Another point that really kind of upset me last night, and I haven't really heard anybody touch upon it just yet, is our receivers dropping passes. That is textbook catches. Yes, I can't blame Dominic Hixon for Eli Manning overthrowing him. I believe that was in the third quarter.
Correct.
I can't blame Dominic Hixon for that one. But Cruz with three or four drop passes, Martellus Bennett with a few drop passes, that's not Giants football. That's not going to win you the game. And when I was at the game and seeing those drop passes, it just demoralized the entire stadium. And we did not deserve to win yesterday by the way we were playing. There was no running game. The passing game really wasn't getting too excited. And another thing that really upset me last night was the Giants' ability to run the two-minute offense. That was bread and butter used to be last year for them. They were lollygagging, taking their time, getting up to the line, not getting the plays off, wasting a lot of time. And like I said, we really bit the bullet for last night.
Hey, look, you're 100% right, and that's one thing Lance and I are right. We didn't bring up, and those are the Victor Cruz drops, which really the Giants could have scored a lot quicker on that final scoring drive that they had if Cruz would have made that catch on the sideline. He dropped the first down catch earlier in the game as well. And, you know, we've seen Cruz have those issues before. He was in double-digit drops last year, despite his great year. He has some of those concentration drops where he's so interested in using his phenomenal run-after-the-catch skills that he looks down the field before looking the ball in. And that hurt the Giants yesterday, and that was another case of the broader topic that we discussed before in terms of missed opportunities, not scoring after the Boley interception, drop passes, the chances the Giants had, getting the Cowboys off the field on first and 30, missing Dominic Hixon when he was wide open on a little seam/mini post route over the middle when he beat Skandrick off the line of scrimmage on that play. But again, Eli was also pressured on that play by Jason Hatcher, one of the reasons he couldn't be that accurate with the throw. But those are all missed opportunities, but he's right. Victor Cruz has got to do a better job catching the football.
And I'll even take it a step further, John. You know, one of the reasons that may have cost Victor Cruz even a spot on the roster last year, he was on the bubble towards the end of the preseason, was the fact that he could not sometimes hold on to the football. You know, the key is you got to secure it before you think about what you want to do down the field, and that was evident last night. You touched on a couple of the drops when they happened. I mean, he could have set the tone real early. The first drive of the game, it's 3rd and 5 from their own 21. It's a first down catch. Yeah. Cruz makes that. You milk some more clock. You gain some continuity. Who knows?
That was a little behind them, but still, it's a pass you should have caught.
Yeah, catchable ball. And there was another one where he was right sandwiched in between two Cowboys, and it just went off of his chest.
Unbelievable throw on that play by Eli Manning, by the way. Getting it in between the safety and the corner, Skandrick. Oh, my goodness, what a throw that was. But you're right, it went right off Cruz's chest.
I mean, you can't ask Eli Manning to do much more than that. Victor Cruz has to make those plays.
And to that, amazing Doc sends in this tweet. Obviously, upset the Giant fans are. Don't want to see Cruz doing more salsa dancing until he learns how to catch the ball. So clearly, and you know, I understand that, but you know what? You're going to have drops sometimes. It happens. Again, he had drops last year, too. But it was strange. You used to hear in the Cruz coming from the stands after all those catches. It sounded like Cruz, but that's not what it was.
It was going in a different direction, different tone.
201-939-4513. Callers, we got four lines filled up for most of the show here. So if you call in as busy, you can try back, and we'll get you in as soon as we can. But let's keep on the phones here. And up early in California is our buddy Abraham. Good morning, Abe.
Good morning, guys. I want to say something, but I think that last caller just expressed, I think, everybody's sentiment.
Go ahead.
We saw the Giants just so exposed to a very good, dominant Dallas Cowboy team. We saw all the weaknesses yesterday exposed, especially when the Giants were doing poorly, and of course they would pan to the skybox with Jerry Jones and, of course, our buddy Rob Ryan. However, my thought was this. The Giants get the ball inside the red zone, and I'm scratching my head wondering what happened to the offensive line, ground and pound.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, not to say that Brandon Jacobs was our go-to guy, but do you think this is going to bite them in the backside that they don't have a big, strong ground and pound guy for those red zone issues? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, Abraham, you know, it doesn't really have anything to do with the personnel. I think it's the bottom line is you're 1 yard out. Your offensive line should get enough of a push and enough of a surge. It doesn't matter if Brandon Jacobs is back there. It doesn't matter if David Wilson is in there. It's not asking a lot to get 1 yard. I mean, they had trouble with short yardage situations last season, and it's rearing its ugly head again. That's troubling. But, you know, to sit here and break down the personnel, it's not going to accomplish much. Ahmad Bradshaw has the ability to get a hole and punch it in the end zone.
And think of it this way. Over the last couple of years, how many times have we heard Giant fans call up and complain about Jacobs being bad in short yardage and he can't get first downs? Well, now you have Bradshaw and he can't do it. What's the common denominator here? It's the offensive line. And they're simply not getting enough push at the line of scrimmage. Carl Banks, you could hear him getting visibly frustrated watching it last night on the air on the Giants radio broadcast that these guys just can't sustain their blocks. They can't get any push. They can't engage and hold their blocks. And it's something that plagued the Giants the entire night. And you had the ball at the one, you run two running plays, and you lose 3 yards. I mean, that's something that's simply unacceptable, and it has to get better. Look, the Giants were extremely fortunate last year to still win the way they did with the 32nd ranked rushing attack. That is an anomaly. They're not going to be able to do that again. This has got to get better. And then, of course, you have David Wilson, your rookie running back, who's supposed to help things. He fumbles, and then he gets benched. So, big problems. The running game has to get fixed.
The other thing to throw into the issues with respect to the running game, and a lot of it falls on the O-line, but at times, I think Ahmad Bradshaw needs to be a bit more patient and stick with the scheme and stick with the blocking.
I agree.
He does a lot of dancing, and this relates to a tweet that we actually got online from D-Doc. He did take a shot at Cruz. He didn't hold back at Bradshaw. Tell Bradshaw to run the ball. Stop auditioning for Dancing with the Stars. There was a bit of tap dancing last night. And give him credit. He, at times, created something out of nothing.
Oh, a couple
he
times.
Was very,
sure. No question.
Very aggressive in terms of picking up 5 yards when it looked like he was going to lose two.
Yeah.
But there's other times where that's uncalled for. And you need to maybe just settle for the yard or two to at least build some momentum and continuity.
And, you know, Carl Banks talked about that last night, too. And, again, I'm watching the game, but Carl Banks is watching on a completely different level. So I'm going to trust him in this respect. Where, you know, a lot of times what will happen is that you have an understanding with your lineman that look, if you're going to miss a block, miss it outside, miss it inside. So at least the running back will know how to adjust when he's running a play. What Carl said is that Bradshaw almost looks confused as when he gets the ball, he has no idea how well the blocking is going to be in front of him and where it's going to go. It's preventing him from being decisive and making that first cut and just going. Now, can he do it anyway? Maybe just get a yard? Sure. And has Bradshaw kind of freelance a little bit and not run the prescribed play at times in the past? That's happened too. And Coach Coughlin said that before in press conferences and such. So is that an issue? Yeah, but again, I think you're right. It really comes back to the offensive line opening more holes and getting a better push. It doesn't seem to matter who's back there. There just isn't a lot of room to run.
And that's something you figure, John, that they should be able to work on in practice. If you're saying that Bradshaw's unsure of where the blocking's going to open up, I mean, that's just he and the offensive line being on the same page, yeah. And that's what you got to work on in practice.
Remember, though, there wasn't a whole lot of full contact and stuff in training camp, too. And, you know, people say it's a new CBA, but before the CBA, they weren't tackling and doing full contact more than once or twice during camp anyway, so it's really not that big of a difference. 201-939-4513. Our buddy Steve is up in Connecticut. What's up, Steve?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Good morning.
Hey, Steve.
I got a question, man.
Sure.
With all the miscues and everything, you know, how much stock do you put in this game? Because I personally think yesterday was the Super Bowl for Dallas Cowboys. I don't even think they care if they make the playoffs. I think they're just happy they won yesterday.
Well, I can tell you, I think the game meant more to the Cowboys than it did to the Giants, only because the Cowboys had to get over that mental thing of not being able to beat New York last year, and the Giants really smacking them around in two straight games and getting and winning the Super Bowl on the back of the Dallas Cowboys. So I think you're right. I think the game did mean more to Dallas than the Giants, and it's a long season. It's far from over. We saw what happened last year. So, yeah, I think that in a lot of respects, Steve, you're right.
But it's also a new Cowboys defense, Steve. So
that's
you need to take something away from that. And you can maybe point to the fact, yes, this was their first look at Maurice Claiborne and Brandon Carr up close and personal, and they'll have some film and they can make adjustments in the second meeting. But, you know, the reason why Eli Manning threw for over 700 yards in the first two meetings last season was because the secondary struggled. I mean, it was Terrence Newman and Mike Jenkins out there. Now you've got a whole new revamped secondary, and the fact that the Giants struggled somewhat against that, that's a bit troubling because they're going to see these guys again, and they're going to have to get past them if they want to ultimately get the division crown again and punch a postseason ticket.
Now this is something I noticed last year opposed to this year. Two different teams, though. When we played the Cardinals, right, it was Patrick Peterson on Hakeem Nicks, and he did what he needed to do. Last night, yeah, Claiborne on him. I personally like Patrick Peterson over Claiborne, and Nicks wasn't really as effective. Like, why is that?
Well, I think Nicks was probably a little healthier last year against Patrick Peterson than he was against Claiborne this year, to be honest with you. Remember, Nicks had to sit out practice or chose to sat out practice for precautionary reasons two times last week. He only played in one preseason game. I don't think Nicks is 100% yet. Is he close? Is he healthy enough to play and be effective? Sure. But I don't think he's 100%, and I think that's one of the reasons you probably didn't see a whole lot from him last night.
Nicks, to me, served the same role as Jason Witten last night. You know, Witten wasn't necessarily putting up monster numbers, but his presence alone creates attention and helps open up opportunities for others. So that's what I would take away from last night regarding Hakeem Nicks. He's going to be a key contributor, but sometimes you need a game or two underneath your belt till you return to full form. And that's what I think we'll start to see maybe come week two or week three with respect to Hakeem Nicks.
Now, another thing too, guys, I think the first half, like for the defense was setting up the offense, you know, to put an offense in good positions, mm-hmm. and the offense just couldn't do anything. So you think that took a little bit out of the defense? Like, damn, we're setting you guys up, and what all we got is 3 points out the deal?
Yeah, you know what? Coach was asked if he thought the defense got tired in the second half, and he made a good point, though. The Cowboys really didn't run that many plays. If I'm looking at the stats here, if I can pull up a number of plays for the Cowboys, well, they passed it 29 times.
And they ran it 26.
You throw in a couple sacks in that mix right there. So the Cowboys probably ran around, let's say, 60 plays about an offense, which isn't an inordinate number of plays by any means. So I don't think, Steve, that the defense got tired. Did they get frustrated that they had to keep going out there and then trying to stop the Cowboys? Maybe. But that doesn't make up for the fact, and I'm going through my play-by-play here, which is why this is such good radio at the moment, as you hear papers going in the background. But I believe on 4 second-half drives, if I can find the drive sheet here somewhere, here we go. In the second half, the Cowboys had, let's see.
Well, they did have that one lengthy drive, 8 plays, 82 yards, that took 7 minutes off the clock. So the defense was on the field for a lengthy period of time. But then again, you know, they've got the numbers right now in their front 7 to rotate. Maybe not so much in the secondary, but it's not as if Justin Tuck, Osi Umenyiora, and JPP have to play every single down. They have the ability to mix and match, and that should keep guys fresh for the most part.
All right, well, here you go. The Cowboys in the second half. The Cowboys only had 9 possessions, including the final one. So they really had 8 true possessions in this game, Steve. They had the punt on the first possession. You had the fumble, and they were on the move the second possession. You had the interception the third possession, then a punt. All right, those are all in the first half. Then we're going to get to the second half, or rather the final drive of the second quarter for the Cowboys. You had a 7-play, 78-yard drive, touchdown. Then you go to the second half, 9 plays, 80 yards, touchdown. 8 plays, 65 yards, field goal. Then they went 8 plays for 112 yards because of all the penalties on that drive for the touchdown on the final drive. So really after those first few possessions, Steve, the Giants' defense couldn't get off the field. I'm not going to put that on the offense. The defense has got to get one stop in the second half, and they couldn't get one.
And even if you're tired, John, on that drive, that was 8 plays, 112 yards. It really was 82 if you factor in the penalties. They had an opportunity.
Net yards, 82, correct.
To prevent on a first and 15. I mean, this was one long possession after another for the Cowboys. They had a second and 10.
This was in the fourth quarter, Lance, or the
this
third?
This was the fourth quarter.
All right, I got it right here.
Very early in the fourth quarter with just over 13 minutes left. The Cowboys got possession, first and 10 from the Dallas 18. So after they got their initial first down, there were still a lot of long yardage situations. First and 15, make a stop. They give up 10 yards to Miles Austin.
Yep.
Then later on in the drive, you got first and 10. It's one penalty after the other, so it backs them all the way up to first and 20 and then first and 30, and you give up a 34-yard touchdown.
Yeah, first and 30. You can't give up a 34-yard touchdown catch on first and 30. I mean, just look at this drive here. On one drive, Lance, the Cowboys had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 penalties. Three
all
of them,
the offensive line.
Yeah, two of them of the 10-yard variety, three of the 5-yard variety. But if you're a defense and a team commits 3 penalties on one drive, you got to get a stop there. I mean, the Cowboys were handing that possession to the Giants, and they're like, no. We don't want it, guys.
They were taking 2 steps back and then 3 steps
yep.
forward. That's essentially what was happening. But you're right, that's inexcusable. A team that commits 5 penalties should not still have some signs of life to get in the end zone.
201-939-4513, 201-939-453. Steve, good job on the call. Appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Let's go to John down in Georgia. What's up, Johnny?
Good morning, guys. My mom and I were watching the game last night, and when they had the ball on the 1-yard line, it's Kevin Kilbride's idea to run the ball into the line. Why couldn't he fake into the line, have Eli roll out to the right or the left, and toss to the tight end or wide receiver?
Well, I mean, I don't think Kevin Kilbride was trying to run for -1 and -2 yards. You're on the 1-yard line.
Yeah, but
you shouldn't be able to paddle the ball.
The past years when he was offense coordinator, you know, with the Giants, and run, and they always had to settle for 3 points. And that doesn't make sense. You know, if it doesn't work, do something
but you're,
else. Do
you're
something.
1 yard out. You're what you want them to sacrifice running the ball by throwing it from 1 yard out. You have an offensive
yes,
line.
Yes, because they can't score points from the last year with Jacob, who couldn't make a yard. You know,
you can't
you
become one dimensional.
Be innovative.
Though. You can't become one dimensional. Then you become too predictable. You got to mix and match.
But if you have a successful passing game, that will help your running game.
I agree
if you
with
have
you.
A successful running game, it helps your passing game.
Look. Yeah. John, I understand what you're saying, and, you know, hang out. Don't go anywhere here. But it's just that you're on the 1-yard line. You have to be able to have some amount of physicality. Look, the Giants use plenty of play action close to the goal line. They use it a lot. But remember, this is the start of the season. It's game number one. One of the goals of this Giants season this year was to improve in the running game. So it's the first opportunity on the doorstep. You got to try to pound it in if that's the message you're trying to drill to your team when you start a year. You know what I mean?
Well, if you have a rookie as a backup to the number one running back and you don't have a real, you know, bull to run into the line, can't you try to do some creative things, try to put it in people's mind down the road that they can do it on first down, then maybe they can do it on second down? You know, to give it for down the road with the 49ers, the Saints, you know, the Packers, just put it in their back of their mind, the Giants are going to throw on first down. We'll prepare for that. And they, you know, the lanes open up and they score a running touchdown.
Well, I think you could certainly make an argument and appreciate the phone call that they could have maybe lined up three or four receivers on second down potentially when they lost 2 yards to perhaps mix and match as opposed to taking a goal line stance on that second down. And I did have a caller last night, John, who threw that out. And, you know, listen,
people
a lot of,
love killing Kevin Gilbride, but it's not fair. Yeah. This guy had the Giants in the top five in the offensive categories every year. And last year, he couldn't run at all, and his passing system is so prolific, the Giants still win the Super Bowl. Kevin Gilbride should get credit for that. He shouldn't get killed for it. It's not the designs of the run, and that's not why they're not working. They're not getting blocked up. And I'm looking at this from last year. I'm trying to see. The Giants did not have that many rushing touchdowns last year, did they? No, they only had 16 rushing touchdowns, and they had, you know, Eli Manning had, you know, 30-odd passing touchdowns. So it's not like, you know, I know a lot of those are big plays, mind you, but the Giants did an awful good job last year, I think, mixing it up. Because this is how I know. We got calls last year complaining at times that Gilbride ran the too much in short yardage. We got calls that he passed it too much. We got calls that
ran
did
that screen play
much.
That never worked. How about that?
Or the draw play and had a shotgun that never worked. So usually when you're getting five or six different complaints about a guy that he does one of those six things too much, do you know what that probably means? He's probably doing a pretty good mix of everything. And that's kind of how it goes sometimes.
And you need that because you
want to
try to...
He's a good offensive coordinator. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of people killing him.
You want to try to catch the defense off guard. But, you know, getting back to the creativity debate, you're 1 yard out.
What, are you running a flea flicker?
I mean, how creative do you need to be to get the ball in from 1 yard out? This is not a mystery. This is not complex.
No.
You don't have to get out a new chart with different X's and O's schemes.
But do you want Eli Manning running a bootleg?
I mean, just give the ball to your running back, make a push, and get him in. He doesn't have to even get his full body in. The football just needs to cross the plane,
Reach out.
If it's 2 seconds. I mean, you don't need to get so creative from that perspective. So, you know, I understand the fans are frustrated, and that was a big key setback for them because if they get a touchdown in that situation, who knows where the game goes from that point on. But bottom line, 1 yard out, get a running back, get a push, and punch it in.
Be mad at them not being able to run it in. Not that they tried to run it in. It's a big difference. 201-939-4513. All four lines are lit up. Brian's down in Philly. What's up, Brian?
Hey, what's up, fellas? How y'all doing?
Hey, Brian.
Go ahead, Brian. You're a little low, pal.
Say it again?
No, go ahead, man. You sound better now.
Oh, okay, cool. Just the loss really, really hurt me last night. It's just, I think it was Dallas secondary. I think it was something, being that we didn't get the running game going, and that's how we are. Running game, open up the pass game for Eli. That's when we're really good. And I think that being that we didn't get the run game off, and it was good play calling. I mean, Gilbride calls good game. You know what I mean? It's just that you know, I don't know if it was the line, but we wasn't getting the run game off. And I honestly believe that Dallas got better in their secondary. It was something that Knicks was covered, Cruz was covered, and, you know, Hickson, I love Hickson, but he's more of a kick return guy to me. You know, he's reliable. I think that's why we had him at third, you know, receiver. But I think I got a feeling that, you know, Reuben Randle will probably step in that position. And I think that rookie running back, he'll get it together after a while. First game jitters, it happens. And, you know, luckily this game is early in the season. So, you know, that's what I wanted to call about.
Okay, Brian, good call. Now I think it's a good, honest criticism, but a level-headed analysis of this game yesterday. I think a lot of what he said makes an awful lot of sense, especially talking about the Dallas defensive backfield. Now, I will say this, too. I didn't watch the game tape or anything, but just from watching television replays and watching high atop in the radio booth at MetLife Stadium, it looked like the Cowboys' corners are allowed to do a lot of physical stuff after that 5-yard window at the line of scrimmage. Now, it went both ways. The referees just didn't throw a lot of flags in this game until the fourth quarter. But it looks like the Cowboys' defensive backs were very physical with the Giants' wide receivers, and there weren't a whole lot of flags being thrown.
That's also part of Claiborne's game. I mean, Randle even touched on that. He likes to jam guys at the line of scrimmage, and that was on full display last night. It's the bottom line. If the officials are not calling it, the players are going to take advantage of it. And there was a lot of contact at the line of scrimmage. There was a lot of pushing and shoving up the field. But it was even.
Yep.
That's the one thing you need to take away from last night's game. And I know a lot of people pointed to that Victor Cruz play on
third
down.
He was held.
There was contact. But when the Cowboys were in a similar situation, you know, the Giants were trying to get away with murder too. So as long as the officials are calling it even back and forth, I don't really have too much of an issue with it. It's when one team is getting a significant advantage, that's when the officials are determining the outcome of the game. And that's troubling to me. But for the most part, you know, it was balanced because the Giants were getting away with some tugging at the line, and so were the Cowboys, specifically on that drive where they were called for 5 penalties, and you could probably make the argument that Dallas could have been called for 10 penalties. I mean, the Cowboys' offensive line has a long way to go. And I know we're not here to break down the ins and outs of the Cowboys team, but they've played some games of musical chairs with that line. They've had some injuries. They're going to have to improve in that aspect, and so are the Giants. Yeah.
Penalties have been an issue for the Cowboys for a long time here. 201-939, that's really nothing new over the last 5-10 years since Bill Parcells coached the team at the beginning of the century. 201-939-4513. Charles in North Carolina. What's up, Charles?
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Good morning.
Hey, yeah, you know, I called in last year. I was the main one last year talking about the Deion Grant thing, you know. Looking at the game last night, I agree with you, too, on the offensive side of the ball. This team looks very vanilla, and you kind of seen it in the Patriot game when they couldn't move the ball. It seemed like the opposing defenses know what this team's going to do before we do it. Now, the O-line, you know, that is a problem, but this team really doesn't have anything new to bring to the table as far as scheme. Like, every route we were running, like, they were right there. They played, the Dallas Cowboys, they played the game perfectly as you could play it from a defensive standpoint. Now, as far as our defense go, you know, I think we need to maybe go back to that three. I don't know why we didn't employ the three safety scheme last night with Will Hill. I don't even know why we didn't do that, man, with knowing that we didn't have got two corners that really didn't even play. What's your guys' thoughts on that? I'm in my car, so if I can listen, you know,
sure,
off for a little bit.
No problem. Lance, why don't you touch the secondary thing, and then I'll touch the offensive creativity.
I know
go
how
first.
Excited
go
you are
first.
About the offensive creativity.
Go ahead first.
Well, the point I was going to bring up with respect to why we didn't see much of the three safeties is, remember, the linebacker core is healthy this season. So if Perry Fuel can keep three legitimate linebackers out there, why should he sacrifice that?
And they have three good linebackers, too, with Williams, Boley, and Keith Rivers that could all cover and play the weak side.
They're
right.
Versatile.
And they also have a real slot corner in Hosley.
So I don't think you are in that position where you need to sacrifice those other positions just to throw out a third safety, which we saw so often when Deion Grant got in the mix. The linebacker core is strong. It's healthy. Rivers is certainly making his presence felt. Boley made a key interception. Right. Unfortunately, they weren't able to punch it in. And Kiwanuka gives you play on the line and then as the second layer of defense. So, you know, until something maybe breaks down regarding that scheme, I don't think they need to turn to the three safeties at this point.
And he's right. Clearly, the Giants need more creativity on offense. They only won the Super Bowl last year. That's not good enough. They didn't score enough points against the Patriots in the Super Bowl. You got to put up a 30 spot in that game. Guys, I understand the easiest thing in the world when you watch sports is to do two things. You can either go after the star player, in which case you're not going to do it here because Eli Manning has won you two Super Bowls, so you're not going to go after him. The second easy thing you can do is go after the coaches, all right? And in the NFL, that means you either go after the head coach for lack of discipline or some other thing like that, which obviously you're not going to, you know, go after Coach Coughlin about. But you could go after the offensive or defensive coordinators for play calling. And I understand that's the easy thing to do. That's the silver bullet solution that most fans like to give for most problems at LA football team on the offensive or the defensive side of the ball. But we're not dealing with rocket science here. If there's one thing that I've learned since I started working for the Giants about 6 years ago and being so close to this thing,
it's that you don't get much sleep after night.
Well, no, okay. That's definitely
I just wanted
one.
To throw that
but
out.
The second thing would be that these games come down to guys making plays. Now, if you're dealing with a scheme that's so horribly inept, you'll see it, and that coach will get fired, okay? Kevin Gilbride has been an offensive coordinator in this league for more than 20 years now. His offense in Houston was one of the best passing offenses the league has ever seen back with Warren Moon and company. The Giants have won two Super Bowls with him as offensive coordinator. He's turned Eli Manning into a top five, maybe even top three, quarterback in the National Football League. Your team won the Super Bowl last year because of your offense. Or I should say this. They made the playoffs because of the offense. The defense turned it on. That's what got them to the Super Bowl. Kevin Gilbride is not the problem. And he's also not going anywhere, by the way. Kevin Gilbride's team could score 0 points for six straight games. They could get shut out six straight games. He's still not going to get fired.
I think there's some security in winning a Super Bowl. Just want to go out on a limb there.
Two Super Bowls. So, folks, I get it. It's frustrating when he can't punch in at the one. It's frustrating when he only score that many points against a team like the Cowboys that you put up 30 spots against last year. I get it. It's not the play calling. It's Victor Cruz dropping three passes. It's the offensive line not opening holes. It's David Wilson fumbling the football. It's Akeem Nicks still not being 100%. It's the officials not throwing a flag for three quarters. Throw all those things into a mix here, all right? All of it's part of it. But it's not Kevin Gilbride's fault that they can't get a yard at the one, or that Cruz can't catch a pass, or that Eli overthrows Hickson on a little mini post going into the end zone. That's not Kevin Gilbride's fault. That's on the players. I'm done.
I want to thank Charles for getting John Schmelk all worked up.
Taking Devin's role.
Really, you know, I thought we would have had to feed him these fruity drinks or whatever you grab
from
the kitchen.
It's a smoothie.
Whatever you call it.
But it's a banana blueberry smoothie.
But the fact now that Charles took care of business, this is just to my delight. I want to throw out something
Now,
else.
I should say, Lance meant fruity just because it actually is a fruity drink.
Well,
there's fruit
go.
In the drink. I just want to make sure you guys don't get the wrong idea. It actually is a fruit drink, so there you go. 201-939-4513.
I want to throw something else
sure,
out
what
in
do you
terms
got?
Of the offense, and perhaps this will get you just as worked up. But
I don't
the
know.
Other
I'm,
thing to
I'm
keep
out
in mind,
energy. That was all the energy I had left, Lance. I'm done.
I'm not going to sit here and rip apart the play calling. Number one, it's only been one game. And listen, we've been debating this all of last season, and then they wound up making changes and going on to win a Super Bowl. But another thing that they were very reliant on last season, and it wasn't evident last night mainly because there were a lot of drops, big plays.
Correct.
Okay, Victor Cruz would make a catch sometimes for 10 yards, and he'd turn it into 60 or 70 yards. And that really helped them get over the hump and pull out and squeak out some big victories.
Yeah, big play offense.
You can't always rely on that, though. And you can't assume that that's going to be there. And you also have to assume that defenses are going to now hone in on Victor Cruz, and he may not have those opportunities. But a big facet of the Giants' offense was Victor Cruz making a catch and then breaking down the field and weaving in and out of traffic. If that's not there this season, certainly you need to try to fill that void. And that may open the door to in which you have to get somewhat creative in how you go about calling plays. I want to throw out another tweet here related to the subject of the struggles of the offense. John Morley writes, I know you need balance, but it seems like we're at the point where we need Eli to throw 40 to 50 times for us to win. Well, he did throw 40 to 50 times last season, and they were able to work out and get over the issues with respect to the running game. And it would not surprise me if you have games this season where he has to rely on his arm and throw 45 times. And the Giants have proved that they can win. The other thing to keep in mind is Martellus Bennett, I thought, was the biggest bright spot last night.
Yeah.
If he can continue to play like this, if he can also add another push on the line, that could help the running game in the long run.
Yeah, and his blocking last night wasn't great, and that's really uncharacteristic from him. He's known as a great blocker, one of the reasons they brought him in here. But he, much like the rest of the offensive line, I don't think it had a great game blocking, at least. That's what Howard Cross is telling me watching it from the sideline. Again, I'm going to trust these guys. They've been former players. They know what they're talking about much more than I do. So that's what they're telling me, and I'll believe it. But, yeah, you got like we did in the passing game. He had that mismatch on the corner for the touchdown. Eli knew to just throw it up and high to him, and he reached up there. He made a nice catch. And, look, I was very skeptical of the Martellus Bennett signing, and I wasn't that shy about, I maybe didn't say it outright, but I made references to it that he, despite having a decent amount of opportunity in Dallas with their two tight end formations, could either never get healthy or make plays consistently. He had drops. And first week of camp, he was hurt in the OTAs. First week of camp, Martellus Bennett looked a step slow. He came in at like 290 or something like that. But as he learned the offense, him and Eli got a little chemistry going. He looked better and better in practice. And I agree, Lance. I think he can be a real, real good weapon for the Giants right now as long as he keeps his head on straight. 201-939-4513. Rontabra. Is that what his name is? Ron Tobias, you're in New York. What's up, Ron Tobias?
Hi. I was watching most of the game last night.
Yep.
And what sort of bothered me was when you watch the Giant receivers go to get passes, that the referees didn't call all the holding and pulling that went on. And I think that was a big part of why a lot of the receivers either didn't get open or didn't catch passes that were sent to them. And also, it was the same thing with the Dallas offensive line. I mean, they were like, you know, holding, you know, the defensive linemen from the Giants and almost tackling them, and there were never any flags. Now, I know earlier on the shows a few people mentioned, or at least one of you mentioned something about that the Giants were doing the same thing, and to be honest, I didn't see that, but it seemed very obvious that if it was on both sides, then obviously it should have been called on both sides. But because it wasn't called, it just probably made things worse, and they felt that they could get away with it more, and I think that significantly hurt the Giants because their running game wasn't working, and so the only thing that was working was the passing, and if there was a lot of holding, then that was my opinion.
Hey, look, I agree. I think down the field the Dallas quarterbacks maybe got away with some stuff, but on the offensive line, look, I mean, I'm not sitting there, and during the game, you can't see who's holding on either team. A couple plays, there was an obvious missed call, for example, on the play where Kiwanuka got grabbed on the long DeMarco Murray run. That was a missed call, sure. But you can't say that the Giants got too much of the short end of the whistle when they got penalized four times for 33 yards, and the Dallas Cowboys had 13 penalties called on them for 86 yards. So the Cowboys, again, not early in the game, but later on, they did have their share of penalties called on them. And generally speaking, for the first half or so, flags weren't thrown on either team.
And if you want to point to penalties impacting the outcome of the game, then somebody needs to explain to me how penalties and holding played a role in Victor Cruz dropping passes.
Yep.
Played a role in Ahmad Bradshaw not getting in from 1 yard out.
Yep.
And played a role in David Wilson coughing up the football, because I didn't see any issues or any penalties on those three
situations. I'll throw in one more. How about the Giants defense not being able to get the Dallas Cowboys off the field once in the second half when they needed a stop?
Yeah. All right, appreciate the
phone call. Tobias, appreciate it, man. 201-939-4513. We rendered him silence. Not bad.
Well, we don't want the lines to remain silent. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You can also chime in on Twitter, hashtag GiantsChat.
Doing a good job on Twitter today.
Yeah, we're getting actually our boy Devin with another liner for you. The easiest thing to do is put in Ramses and win games. Kevin is fine as OC. We don't need to put him on the chopping block. Simple solution.
Good.
There you go. There's
that's
the creativity the Giants need.
Devin.
Just insert Ramses Barden, call his number, and everything's good.
I forgot to tell you. Guess who called the show yesterday morning with Anita and I, and he dropped his newest rhyme.
Get out of here,
yeah.
Vinny.
Vinny
wow.
In Pennsylvania called
Vinny
it.
Vinny seems to be scared when I'm hosting.
It was a long one. It's like he was working on that the entire offseason.
Wow. Well, he should. We haven't heard from him for a while.
I know.
So he had to work out the kinks in the preseason. But if Vinny's listening, we're going to expect a phone call when you and I are behind the mic.
Now, he called in and he prefaced, "I'm sorry." He actually said, I believe he said, "I'm sorry for calling when Lance isn't hosting the show, if I'm not mistaken."
At least he got his priorities straight.
You know, the two little guys have to stick together, like
absolutely.
You guys like to say. 201-939-4513. Elliot's in New Jersey. What's up, Elliot?
Hey, guys. How are you?
What's up, pal?
Doing well, Elliot.
I got a couple points I just want to make. First of all, I think you guys do a great job covering the Giants. I watch everything online that you guys do. And during all of training camp, every day I would tune in to your postings online. So I think you guys do a fabulous
job. Hey, thank you very much, Elliot. We appreciate it.
So the second thing I want to talk about is Chris Collinsworth made a point last night during the game about the conditioning of the athletes during the game, specifically a guy like Fred Robbins, who normally during the games, they said, gets 20 to 25 snaps, but last night because of injuries to Chris Canty and Marvin Austin.
Do you mean Rocky Bernard?
He would have to play 50 snaps in the game.
Do you mean Rocky Bernard?
Yeah, Rocky Bernard.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I'm
no
Rocky
problem.
Bernard. You're right.
Yep. Okay, go ahead.
So my point is I think last night showed, and Chris Collinsworth's point illustrated the importance of preseason games and preseason camp, because the conditioning last night I felt was really bad on the defensive side of the ball. And, you know, I know the new CBA has all these protections against the athletes in terms of every other day they're doubles and you can only have contact on certain days, but clearly, you know, the first month of the season in certain parts of the country, specifically this area where the humidity is high, you need to have good conditioning. You, and I'm not saying don't protect the players, but their conditioning needs to be better. And I feel like the I understand that you have to protect the athletes, but I also feel like they are now not doing a better job getting themselves better prepared. So these games are real close in the first half, like you saw, but these guys aren't used to playing so late into the game. So you don't even see the best football until October. And, you know, these games come back to bite you sometimes because, yeah, it's only one game, but that one game can be the difference between winning the division and being a wild card team or not even making the playoffs at all. So I think, just last night showed me that these guys need to have these four preseason games. It helps the athletes get into shape. Do you risk injury? Absolutely, but that's part of the game. You know, people are going to get hurt week one. They may get hurt. I mean, look at how many players get hurt when they're not even in season. So I just think, you know, last night showed with the conditioning of the athletes the importance of being able to play four preseason games, the importance of training camp, getting your athletes healthy, getting them physically ready to play in September, because this is the hardest month of the season because this is when it'll be hottest all around the country.
Yeah, it's absolutely a catch-22, as you just touched on.
That's
the fact
good
about,
point.
But it is. It's a very valid point that you want guys to be ready to go out there week one when some of them are only playing very few snaps between practice and games. But, you know, I think another contributing factor regarding the conditioning last night was the Cowboys' offense did a really good job of keeping the Giants' defense consistently on the field. You know, when you put together 5, 7, 8 minute drives and you don't necessarily have enough personnel to mix and match at times or even get guys on and off the field. Right. Because remember, if Dallas is continuing to move the chains, they're moving quickly so the Giants can't make substitutions. You know, that means that guys need to suck it up for 10, 11, 12 consecutive plays, and you're going to start to see towards the latter part of that drive that Dallas is going to be able to execute and the Giants are going to struggle. So that contributed. Clearly, I think the preseason factor that was just touched upon is another big contributing factor, and that's something that they're going to have to work on as the season progresses. The good thing is they got now more than a week to prepare for the Bucs. They've got plenty of film to review, and you would assume and hope that they're going to now make those adjustments because they got plenty that they can work on.
Yeah, remember, no two-a-days if they shorten the preseason. And, you know, all those things will eventually hurt the players. As much as they don't want to do them, in the end, once the regular season comes, not having all that preparation is going to hurt the players.
But it also falls on the players individually.
Sure.
They need to prepare themselves. And I know that they're not necessarily putting the helmets on and the pads, but even outside of practice, when they're not with the teams, outside of OTAs, you know, they need to be well-disciplined and continue to maintain their conditioning so that once they get to training camp, it's not all of a sudden a wake-up call, especially when you get to week one.
A couple of Twitter questions I want to get to before we get back to your phone calls real quick. This one from Cam Tahir. Why did the offense insist on sticking with the running game when it wasn't working? Well, you have to have balance. If you're just going to pass, the Cowboys will pin the ears back and just rush the passer every play. Lance made that point earlier in the show. Then a good one, I think, coming in from Vino. Don't think we need to bench Wilson for the fumble. Remember, Cruz got benched last year after the first game after just one drop, and the Giants lost the game. Now, you could make the argument, though, that Cruz benching serve as a wake-up call for him, and maybe that's why he turned the season around that was so good. So it's tough to, you know, balance that tough love with giving the players an opportunity. You know what I mean? Would I have liked is David Wilson get a few more touches to maybe break one? Yes, but I totally understand and support, quite frankly, what Coach Coughlin did. The young guy has to make to understand. And remember, Wilson had a problem with fumbles in college, so this is one of the things that was a knock on him coming out in the draft this year. Ball security is the number one priority, and the players have to understand that.
I think that the key thing with David Wilson that hurt the Giants, which is why I was a little surprised they did bench him, you want to present two different style of runners to the Cowboys' defensive front. And the fact that all they had to worry about was Bradshaw. Bradshaw right. gives you one style, Wilson gives you another. He has that speed factor. They did see him in special teams, but if you throw him out in the backfield, that's something else that the Cowboys need to anticipate, and they didn't need to be concerned about that for the whole entirety of the game.
Remember this too, though. Down 14, you're going to throw the ball a lot. David Wilson's pass protection is weak. You don't want him out there in those spots either, so another something else to consider.
Which is something that he didn't necessarily touch on, Tom Coughlin, in the the press conference, but I thought that was another contributing factor. Pass protection, pass protection, pass protection.
Yeah, Coach never said he came out outright and said, I benched him because he fumbled. He said his playing time might have been affected because he's fumbled. But, again, pass protection on third and in the two-minute drill might have had something to do with it.
And here's one quick thing. We are going to get back to your call, so just remain patient for those of you holding on the lines. But one player that I thought created some type of a burst in the running game when they utilized him correctly.
Henry Hanoski.
Exactly. For some reason, there was about two or three plays where Bradshaw got a good surge because of Hynoski's ability to get out into open space. That just wasn't consistent enough throughout the game.
Consistent in the running game is something the team has struggled with for more than a year. 201-939-4513. Mike in Florida. What's up, Mike?
Yeah, I'd like to make 2 points.
Sure.
I agree with you guys. Excuse me. Every time the Giants lose, you know, everybody seems to get on Gilbright and his play calling and this and that, and excuses pop up everywhere. But the bottom line is, and I think you guys hit it on the nose, is the mistakes that the Giants had were making. When Tuck couldn't make the stop on Murray, and he runs for 29 yards and he keeps that drive alive, and the drop balls by Cruz. And the missed opportunities, basically. They had their chance to stay in this game and even possibly win it, but they made too many mistakes. There was a lot of missed tackles. There was a lot of drop balls. And my second point is when they're on the one-yard line, most cases the defense, the Cowboys, they expect them to Giants to run it, and the Giants set up like they were going to run it, and so they were stopped, and they were stopped twice. And my point is, why not go with a high percentage play? And I'm not trying to override Gilbright's thinking here, but it's just common sense. Why not put two tall receivers in, like Martellus Bennett and our boy Barton there? And that's a high chance of making that catch on a smaller, corner or safe or, you know, whatever. And, you know, you got a better chance of getting that touchdown. That's the kind of thinking I think a lot of people are thinking when they say, you know, Gilbright's not calling the right play. Now, I know they should make a one-yard run. But, the problem is mistakes, miscues, and the offensive line isn't blowing anybody out in that game. And I don't think they haven't done it at all, even on the beginning of last season. They started to come together at the end of, on their Super Bowl run. But prior to that, in the beginning of the season, they weren't blowing open a lot of holes for these running backs like a lot of other teams I see. It's funny because when I watch another team, sometimes they'll just do a little off-tackle run and a guy goes for 20, 25 yards. They're blowing open holes, and that's what the offensive line's got to get back to. They got to play strong and start opening up holes for these running backs where people can keep calling saying, we don't have a running game. But you're right. It's a lot of mistakes. We had the opportunities. We had too many mistakes.
Well,
that's all I want to say.
Jumping off your point about the offensive line, last season, most of the offensive linemen did not play together in the preseason because everybody was hurt. So that, I think, impacted initially why the Giants' running game struggled. This season, it's a bit troubling because, with the exception of Will Beatty, everybody's been out there. And Locklear's had a couple of games under his belt to at least get on the same page as the rest of the guys. David Bass has been healthy, and that's a key offensive lineman, given that he's the center and he works so closely with Eli Manning. I will admit, David Deal had a rough night last night. DeMarcus Ware beat him multiple times.
And so did Anthony Spencer.
There were some protection issues, specifically on the right side, and that's why Ware and Hatcher got to Eli Manning easily. And Deal is a veteran guy, certainly has a lot of mileage under his belt. And, you know, the Giants over the last couple of seasons have shown that they're not necessarily going to go in the direction of bringing back a Kareem McKenzie or a Sean O'Hara. They'd like to get younger. They drafted some
offensive
linemen.
Sean O'Hara is retired, by the way.
Well, but they didn't bring back O'Hara 2 seasons ago. 100%. They wanted to get some youth infused into this line. And I'm not saying that you got to get rid of Deal, but clearly you need to have some versatility and youth to work in.
Well, he didn't play well. First game of the year, he didn't play well. Yeah. Give him some time. Moving back to right tackle this year, hasn't played that position in quite a while, but yeah, I mean, a couple times, and where we've seen Deal have issues with on the left side at times, not consistently, but again, he's been a great offensive lineman for a really long time, is sometimes speed rushers could, you know, take advantage of him. But He was power rushed a couple times in the game last night where Spencer and Ware just got low, got underneath his pads, and pushed him right into Eli Manning's lap, which I was really surprised to see. You don't see that from Deal very often.
Especially since protection issues have not been apparent.
Yeah.
Especially last season. Despite all of their struggles with running the football, the one thing you need to commend the offensive line about is protecting Eli Manning. And they did struggle in that department last night. Deal was certainly a big contributing factor, but they're going to have to work that out, and they're going to have to get on the same page because they got to do a better job, as the caller just pointed out, creating some additional holes, giving Bradshaw some room, and whether that means maybe going to some double tight end formations, that could maybe help, because Bennett is a guy that I think he's a big enough presence, he should be able to make a key impact in the running game.
Yep.
We saw that he could do it in the passing game. Let's see him now do that in the running game. They've got to utilize him more in that department.
But how many times did they try to bring Bradshaw outside and nobody could set that edge on the line? And that's as much the offensive line as it is the tight ends. It's really both those groups together. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Randy down in Virginia. Good morning, Randy.
Good morning, folks. How y'all doing?
Doing well, Randy. What's on your mind today?
Hey, man, everybody wants to get into, you know, the whole knee-jerk thing. I understand that. That's how it's kind of New York state of mind. You know, I'm down here in Virginia, but my mom grew up in Castle Hill, Bronx, so I know all about that. But, you know, I don't want to get into the knee-jerk reaction. I know I saw when the plays was going on that the conditioning definitely came into play, which I think was something that could have played on both teams when, you know, you're playing on a Wednesday after a preseason where, you know, you kind of took some time off. You haven't played a full game yet. But I don't want to get into a panic. I know that the first time that when we played in, like, I think 2007, the first two games of the season, we got, like, a terrible amount of points scored on us.
Lost to Dallas 38-35. Yeah, lost to Dallas 38-35, I believe it was, in week one. And then I think they lost to the Packers in week two, something like 45-24 or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely, man. But to my second point, you know, the line, it definitely didn't get any push. It doesn't matter who you put back there, man. Mm-hmm. Maybe if you put Walter Payton back there, he might have been able to get something going. But the line definitely wasn't getting any push. And something else I saw, I don't know if it was more the conditioning, but it seemed like there was a lack of hustle and intensity when it came to, you know, making some of those tackles and finishing up some of those plays. As far as, like, the push from Heinoski and Bennett, I thought they were straight, man. I didn't see them being a liability at all. Heinoski did an awesome job, I thought, man.
Yeah, I thought Heinoski played a good game as well. I think Bennett had a couple issues setting the edge a couple plays a couple times. DeMarcus Ware stood him up, but, you know, that's a pretty large group that gets pushed around.
Yeah,
and set up by
DeMarcus
Ware.
Exactly. You know, the Cowboys, you know, they're a good team.
Yep.
They're a good team, man. And we got to get healthy, man. And when we had to cut the roster down to 53 players, and we had all those players that were injured, and then we got hit with more of the injury bug, like we always seem to do. It just kind of left us really slim. And then you got Cole getting injured with the hamstrings. I mean, that just blew my mind that first and 30 when.
yep.
I don't even want to talk about it, man.
No, rightfully so. I did. Randy, great call. And I think he takes, and I think a couple other calls have done it so far today as well, the perfect short and long-term combination view of the Giants. You don't panic because it's one game, but you highlight certain areas where you say, all right, this could be a problem throughout the season if we don't get this fixed. And he referenced the offensive line. He referenced the secondary with the cornerbacks. And I think those are the two areas right now where if you're a Giant fan, you worry moving forward if those don't get corrected, it could be a drag on the whole season.
The Giants are the type of team, and history has shown this, they're able to weather the storm. And, you know, you hope and assume that they're going to be able to overcome some of these issues that were displayed last night. You know, getting back to full health is certainly a factor that I think could help them in the long run. But, you know, they got to get over the mental mistakes. You know, you can't substitute players and think that that's all of a sudden going to solve the problem. Victor Cruz needs to make catches. It's as simple as that. They need to be able to pick up 1 yard. They shouldn't be able to get beat on one-on-one situations such as Corey Webster. You know, you're not going to look for a savior off the bench, and you're not going to grab a guy that's going to come off the couch. You're not going to get a Chase Blackburn, for example, last season, who comes back in that Packers game. He was an exception because Blackburn knew the playbook,
right,
and he gave an extra surge. You're not going to bring somebody all of a sudden into the mix 5 or 6 weeks into the season and expect them to digest the Giants' playbook and revamp everything that's occurred. They're going to have to rely on the guys that they put together on this 53-man roster.
Now, and another stat I want to point out in terms of losing your home opener, we got one more call we're going to take before you say goodbye, and Mike will get to you in a second. But Randall Liu, one of the great NFL PR guys, tweeted this out yesterday. Teams that win the Super Bowl are combined 47 or 45, 8-2 or some type of great record in their first game of the season, the years they win the Super Bowl. Here's the funny thing. Giants, 2011, lost their home opener. Giants, 2007, lost their home opener. Giants, 1986, lost their home opener. So, not just opening game of the season, not home opener, excuse me, first game of the year. So, out of those eight losses or whatever it was, the Giants had three of them. So, the point being here, especially for Giant fans, let's not panic after losing the first game of the season. Three out of the four times the Giants have won Super Bowls, they've lost their first game of the season. So, let's not freak out here if you're a Giants fan.
I mean, it's troubling because you want to beat your division rivals. But remember, they lost to the Redskins last season. They got swept by the Redskins. And they were able to overcome some of those issues. You know, this was a hungry Dallas Cowboys team that made tremendous changes to the defensive front and the secondary. Why? Because they didn't want to see Eli Manning throw for over 700 yards. You can't blame
true.
Them from that perspective.
I would have done the same thing. They tried to giant-proof their defense because the Giants knocked them around so badly last year.
If Tony Romo threw for 700 yards or DeMarco Murray ran for 200 yards, the Giants would make adjustments because they know they have to see this team twice a year.
201-939-4513. Mike in South Florida. What's up, Mike? What's up, Mike?
Nothing much, man. I mean, everyone's talking about the defense, how, you know, defense, our secondary was completely banged up. You know, we need to get healthy. You know, they got beat, obviously, the first and 30. That was definitely a heartbreaker right there. But, I mean, there was even plays that the offense could have stepped up. You know, the interception and the horse collar. You have the ball on, what, the four-yard line.
Yep.
You couldn't stick it in for a touchdown. You know, you get 3 points. If they would have got that touchdown, it could have been a whole different ball game.
100%.
You know, it's just what
I know. 100% right.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but again, you know, you got Victor Cruz dropping three balls. You know, you got other guys that, you know, the defense that gave up on the running play when the guy, you know, it just looked like the defense was very sluggish. They weren't there. And It's tough, man. They couldn't capitalize on any of the tackles. If they pushed at least 7+ yard penalties, and they couldn't do it. Romo was on, and the Giants' defense was just, they just weren't all there.
Hey, look, great call. Thanks a lot for the point, Mike. Your line's breaking up a little bit, so I'm going to let you go here. But look, we're not breaking any new ground at this point. We've been talking to you for about an hour and 15 minutes now. We know what the issues are moving forward. And, you know, Michael Coe, I would assume, is not going to be back for the game next week against Tampa Bay. The Giants will hope to get Prince Amukamara back for that game coming off that high ankle sprain. So, we'll see.
But remember, if somebody else gets hurt, Justin Tryon is the next guy up unless, and this was one thing I did want to throw out.
Sure, what do you got?
Hosley in college played on the outside.
Sure,
he has
play
experience.
Outside.
So he's a guy that they could potentially take away from just being solely a nickelback corner.
Correct.
And that's another thing to keep in mind. If Coe is down for a little bit, if they don't have necessarily full confidence in Tryon, don't be surprised to see them perhaps turn to Hosley in man-to-man situations on the outside. Because when he was with Virginia Tech junior year, they barely threw his side. And I understand college and the pros, it's a big difference.
And then you put a role in the slot?
Perhaps. I mean, those are some of the adjustments that they may have to make depending on if this secondary doesn't get back to full health as quickly as they want to. They're hoping that clearly Prince Amukamara is going to be ready to go against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And remember, the Bucs offense presents completely different challenges and will continue to break down that team all next week than the Cowboys do. I mean, it's Josh Freeman versus Tony Romo. There's no Dez Bryant, Miles Austin, and Jason Witten on the Bucs. But they've got a young running back at Doug Martin.
Vincent Jackson's a very accomplished wide receiver.
They beefed up the offensive line.
Mike Williams, a good young wide receiver.
They brought in Carl Nix, who was with the Saints. Yep. So, you know, they made some adjustments to help that offense click. And they've got, you know, a new head coach. Perhaps, you know, they're going to be hungry as the Cowboys.
Hey, no games are easy in this league. I don't care who you play. No games are easy. You got to play well, and you got to play a good football game. I want to touch on a couple of their Twitter things before we say goodbye here. Devin Scott, again, up to his old tricks, trying to get me upset. After the guy called up before, just throw it up to Barton and Martellus Bennett. You can't teach 6'6". I understand. Thank you, Devin. If I got more than 3 hours of sleep, I might be more upset about that. But
what do we got now? Has he been active on Twitter?
No, that's what he wrote. In big capital letters, you can't teach 6'6". Thank you. I appreciate
how about
it.
This? Oscar Rivera coming to your defense. I don't trust Barton, period. He's been with Blue for 4 years, produced nothing. He had his chances to prove, but one touchdown in the preseason. And listen, you know,
I'm not anti-Barton. I'm just saying 6'6", this is the magic pill in the goal line. How many bad fade routes have we seen over the years in the NFL? Not from the Giants, from everybody. 6'6" doesn't just mean automatic touchdown.
No, you have to put together multiple facets of your game. And remember, you know, Barton's not necessarily a savior just because he's 6'6". Right. It's nice to say we're on the 2-yard line. They shouldn't just run it with Bradshaw. Put Ramsey's Barton in because he's a big target. Throw it up to him. Well, you throw it up to him, he's still got to make the play. Like what Miles Austin did, to me, is the perfect example of the aggressiveness you want to see from a receiver.
Yeah.
Romo did not put it in a position where Miles Austin just had to stand there and grab the ball. It was a jump ball.
Good point.
He was more aggressive. He beat Justin Tryon, and that's how you convert on a first and 30.
And that's what you usually see guys like Akeem Nicks do for the Giants. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. And look, we have a whole week to preview Giants-Tampa Bay. I don't want to get into it too much today. As Giant fans are still much more concerned about the game last night. We'll have all week next week to do that. Lance and I will be with you on Monday, by the way, on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Tomorrow morning, it'll be Paul Dottino and Nina Marks. And then we'll have the rest of the schedule the rest of next week. We'll unfurl that as we move along here. So, excellent job by the callers. Good work. It was a lot of fun hearing from you after the Giants game last night. Obviously, a disappointing loss for Big Blue. They'll try to rebound and win their second home game of the season next week. Lance, we've been through this a billion times. Any final thoughts, anything we missed here that you want to get in before we say goodbye?
I think it's just a matter of they have now over a week to regroup, look at the video, and guys are going to have to put these mental mistakes behind them. That's the biggest thing I take away from last night. You know, even the guys who proved that they can go out there and make big plays, like the Victor Cruz, he now has to show that he has some mental fortitude and is able to overcome that next week.
So here's your assignment over the weekend.
We got the play of the game.
We got to name that play.
There we go.
Okay. I'm going to come up with a jingle for name that play just so we can play it for Lance. All right. I'm trying to think.
Got to dig deep here.
Nah.
Well, you want to set the tempo for the rest of the
season. The easy one is the Boley pick and the return. That's the easy one. I'm trying to think if there was another play during the game that might be more fun. But not necessarily. I mean, I don't want to pick a negative play.
You wanted something that obviously impacted the
Like the one I was considering taking was the slight overthrow of Manning to Hickson, because I feel like you can be creative with a just missed play.
What about Hickson's spectacular grab where it was two Cowboys defenders in the vicinity?
That's what we're going to do.
How about
we're
going
to do Hickson. You have a lot of stuff to work with here. I'm not going to give you any hints, but you know, keep in mind the players that are involved, the type of play that it was. So there are a lot of ways you can go with that.
Tips
so
now.
Here's what we're going to go with. And we're going to post this up on Facebook for the fans on Monday, too, to name that play. And we're going to have some fun
and
with that.
And the fans were solid last season in chipping in on that.
Correct, they were. So you guys can hit Twitter on that on Monday's show, too, to name that play. So, Lance, Hickson's catch on the double team on the deep post. All right? I don't need it now. Just give it to me on Monday.
1 week we're going to have to work in some type of Barton play. It wouldn't be a full season.
I'm going to... You're just trying to get me in trouble here. I'm going to keep my mouth shut. Thank you, Lance.
You didn't go for the bait. I'm a little disappointed.
I'm actually kind of impressed with myself.
Dominic Hickson. All right, I'm going to study the
books. Does not happen very often, trust me. Lance, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot, my
friend. Sounds good.
All right, and again, a need and pull tomorrow will be 9:30, Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. For Lance Metal, I'm John Schmelk. Thanks for joining us, everybody, on Big Blue Kickoff Live, only in one place. It's presented by Andrew Mark, by the way, and it's on Giants.com.
Have a good one.